It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The primaries are tomorrow, and the ads from the eight Democratic gubernatorial candidates have been coming fast and furious. But do they help? And how truthful are they? David Cannon is going through the latest ads with us this hour. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. David, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
We're going to be listening to ads, and we're going to post links to them on WPR.org just in case the people listening can't get enough of these ads. We're also taking your calls on this. Democrats, have you decided who you're going to be voting for in tomorrow's gubernatorial primary? Have you been swayed by any of these ads that you've seen in the last week or so? If so, what was it that convinced you? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, David, the ad race in Wisconsin's Democratic primary has been heating up. Is this race still up for grabs?
Yeah, it's definitely up for grabs. The latest polls that we've seen have Tony Evers with a pretty strong lead, but we still have about a third of the electorate that says they're undecided, which is a really high proportion of the voters to be undecided this late in the election season. And so this is a race that really could go any way.
So if they're undecided, but there are eight of them, I mean, is it likely that a third of the voters are going to go for one candidate other than Tony Evers?
Well, true. I mean, with that many people dividing the vote, you'd have to, unless the polls really aren't reflecting the voters are going to turn out. The other problem with primary election polling is that it's harder to identify the likely electorate, and you really just have to rely on people, saying that they are going to vote. And so gauging the actual results in a primary election is always tougher than a general election. But again, Evers does have a pretty commanding lead, and so with seven other candidates dividing that vote, he would certainly have to be the favorite today.
You know, I have to say, I was on Facebook last night, and I saw ads come up on Facebook for Wisconsin candidates. They weren't gubernatorial candidates. Is this something that that some of these candidates might be doing, Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, as in addition to running ads on TV?
Oh, for sure. We've seen a lot of that, especially over the last couple election cycles, more and more candidates buying time on social media as a way to try to target their ad buys more effectively at a lower cost, really, than doing the traditional broadcast ads.
And, you know, they weren't advertising as of a few weeks ago, and all of a sudden these things cropped up. Was this the strategy? I mean, there's a finite amount of money here. Was it just kind of to sit and in the last week just sort of inundate the airways with ads?
Well, I think that's exactly right, and it's because of the lack of resources. Because we had 10 candidates initially and then two dropped out, we're down to the eight candidates. Most of the Democratic contributors sat on the sidelines. There's not much to divide these candidates in terms of their issue positions. So the typical Democratic activist, the person who's actually giving money in the election, is going to wait and see who the nominee is before they contribute money. And so most of these candidates didn't have a lot of resources to spend on ads, and that's why we saw such a concentration of ads just in these last couple of weeks. This is real contrast to the last time Governor Walker ran for re-election against Mary Burke, where she had really cleared the field. Like, there was no serious opposition to her. So we started the campaign for governor back in, like, February and March in 2014. And so really very different election 4 years ago than we're having.
And that could be a downside, too. I mean, February and March, that's 7 months of advertising that makes people tune out after a while, right?
Well, right. I think people do get sick of the ads, and so we're seeing a more condensed election cycle this time. It actually might make it so more voters are paying attention. And then you have the Trump effect, of course, which already traditionally in midterm elections, midterms are typically viewed as a referendum on the president. And I think we're really going to see that in this election, where Donald Trump is going to be the focus of the election, even if he's not on the ballot.
We're talking to David Cannon right now, who is a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We've got Nathaniel from Washburn. Welcome to the program, Nathaniel.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I am going to be casting my ballot tomorrow for Mike McCabe, who I think has a lot of integrity. He's made his whole political campaign and his political, his whole past has basically been founded on trying to get money out of politics, big corporate money out of politics, and I think it speaks volumes to his integrity that he's not taking any money from any political PACs.
Thank you very much for that, Nathaniel. So, but Mike McCabe, David, isn't running ads right now. Is he running social media stuff? Is he doing anything?
Yeah, he's not been as visible as some of the other candidates, certainly. And he hasn't had as much money. He wasn't in the top five or so, at least for sure, of the last fundraising that was reported. So it could just be lack of resources. The other thing that Mike McCabe drew some attention for in one of the candidate forums, he was the only candidate of the eight who said he would not agree right now to endorse the eventual winner in the general election. And that drew some criticism from his fellow Democrats.
We are going to be listening to some of these ads. We want to start with Tony Evers, who is the front runner in the latest Marquette University poll. He got 31% of the vote, pretty 31% of support. But as we're going through the candidates, let's listen to Evers first.
I've always believed that what's best for our kids is what's best for our state. That's why I got into teaching. Educating our kids and developing a skilled workforce is essential to strengthening the middle class. That's what Scott Walker doesn't understand. And that's why he's been the most anti-education governor our state has ever seen. I am Tony Evers, and I'll never play politics with our kids or their schools because their future is Wisconsin's future.
Their future is Wisconsin's future. Also, we should note that Tony Evers is the superintendent of schools in Wisconsin, and he's been fighting Scott Walker on education for a long time. So it's understandable that he would play this education platform up. What do you think is the issue? Do you think that this is going to really hit home with Democratic voters?
Yeah, absolutely. Education is one of the key issues that Democrats are going to be emphasizing here. I think it's going to be education, health care, and the roads. That's what you're going to hear Democrats talking about. But with Evers, clearly education is the big issue that he'll be pushing. And I think that's a very effective, positive ad that he ran there. And in fact, when you look at the Democrats' ads in general, and we'll hear more of these in a few minutes, that one thing I think for the listeners to pay attention to is that in general, they're doing two things. They're making a positive case for their campaign and for the issues they care about. But they also take little shots at Scott Walker and say, the worst education governor ever, according to Tony Evers. But the thing they are not doing, and this is pretty remarkable in a field of eight candidates, is they're not attacking each other. With the exception of Matt Flynn, who went after Evers and a couple of the other candidates in this last forum, the Democrats really held their fire against each other. And it's been really focused on a positive message and then attacks on Governor Walker. And that, I think, is helping the eventual nominee to not have a negative campaign going on among the Democrats.
Walker actually has portrayed himself as pro-education, something that Evers and pretty much all of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates take issue with. What are the arguments in favor or against this?
Well, yeah, this is one of Evers' laugh lines when he's on the campaign. He'll say, Governor Walker says he's the education president, and everyone just breaks out laughing because clearly you had some of the deepest budget cuts for education we've ever seen in the state's history in the governor's first several budgets. Now, the last budget...
We'll come back and talk about the last budget in a moment. We're dissecting the ads for the Democratic gubernatorial primary tomorrow with David Cannon of UW-Madison. There's more in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. After tomorrow, there will be one Democratic gubernatorial candidate facing off against Scott Walker. And boy, have the eight people in the running been trying to get our attention. Well, actually, five of the eight, which we talked about a moment ago. Right now, we're dissecting political ads for this race with David Cannon, who is a political science professor at UW-Madison. We want to hear from you. Have you been welcoming the onslaught of gubernatorial ads in order to help you make up your mind? Are you still undecided? And do ads sway people? If so, does the race just go to the person who raises more money for ads? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, David Cannon, we were talking about Scott Walker portraying himself as the pro-education governor, Tony Evers making fun of him for that, and his budgets don't really play that out, except you were saying that this last budget kind of does.
Right. The last budget is definitely his most pro-education budget that he's had since he's been governor, but it still doesn't begin to make up the cuts that we had seen in previous budgets. So I think it's a strategic mistake on the governor's part to emphasize this issue, because it's not what he's known for. In fact, he's known for cutting education. So if his message should be focused more on the economy, on creating jobs. We have very low unemployment in the state right now. The economy's in better shape than it has been in years, and so he's going to be emphasizing, at least that's what he should do, I think, is emphasize more the economic message and leave education aside, because that's not one of his strengths. I think that's going to be a big vulnerability for him in this election.
But do you think that the people who support Governor Walker will believe him when he says, I'm the pro-education president?
Well, this is the kind of thing that will come out during the general election. I'm sure we'll see plenty of dueling ads on that topic, and I'm sure we'll have some debates where he'll have to defend his record on education. And what he will do, I'm sure, is focus on the last budget rather than the previous 6 years.
We are talking to David Cannon, and we are dissecting the Democratic gubernatorial ads that are coming up that have been playing this whole week and for the primary for tomorrow. Here is Mike Flynn's ad.
There are eight Democrats running for governor. I'm Matt Flynn. I'm the only military veteran and the only one taking a stand to stop the Foxconn deal. Scott Walker's corrupt $4.5 billion corporate welfare giveaway to a Chinese company, all while Trump and Walker put Harley-Davidson jobs at risk. My first day as governor, I'll go to court and stop Foxconn and invest those funds in better schools, health care, and roads.
Democrat Matt Flynn, beating Walker, stopping Foxconn. Let's win with Flynn.
So it seems to me there, David, that there are a couple of things happening. First of all, he's staking his entire campaign on Foxconn. This is a bad deal. You're getting screwed. Vote for me.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gamble, but you have to do something as a candidate to try to stand out in the field. And I think that the Flynn campaign is thinking that the Foxconn deal, will be a negative for the governor once voters find out more about it. Kind of like Scott Walker relied so much on stopping the train the first time he ran for governor 8 years ago. It was all a big part of the thing he mentioned all the time on in his ads and on the campaign trail was we need to stop this $800 million taxpayer boondoggle on the train, and I'm going to cancel it the first day I'm governor. So it really is a similar kind of thing. Now, it wasn't obviously the only thing that Walker campaigned on in 2010, and it's not the only thing that Matt Flynn is talking about right now. Mm-hmm. And notice that the tagline he had at the end, he said, I'm going to take that money from Foxconn and spend it on those three things I talked about, roads, education, health care. That's what we're going to hear the Democrats hammer on.
And that is what a lot of people are talking about. The interesting thing for me is that he threw in this Chinese company, and if you look at the visuals, it makes it even clearer. Is that a straw man?
Well, there, I think it's maybe trying to tap into some of the independent voters who may even be Trump supporters and are uncomfortable with the foreign influence in our economy, and so it could be sort of trying to tap into some of that populist nationalism that has been so strong a source of support for Trump voters. So it could be that Flynn's trying to tap into some of that with the anti-China angle on the Foxconn deal.
We are talking with UW Science Professor David Cannon and taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Mark from Mineral Point, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to bring up a slightly different aspect of the advertising issue, and that is the mode of advertising as opposed to the specific details of the ads. I think some of the people on the Democratic side have realized that they will never be likely to win a TV ad war against Walker and his, you know, billionaire backers. And so a lot of people think the answer is different ways of reaching the voters in unconventional advertising. And the Mike McCabe campaign has really pioneered this approach, and partly because he refuses to take big money donations, so he can't afford a lot of TV ads or any at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has, for example, been using the highway overpass banners that have reached a lot of people, and also banners and large signs at busy intersections at rush hour and so on. And I think that has reached a lot of voters. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised on Tuesday to see how effective this grassroots alternative advertising really is.
Interesting point, Mark. David, what do you think about that? Can anything replace TV ads?
Well, yes. I mean, Mark makes a really important point here, that the landscape of political communication has really changed in the last even just 4 years. And especially through what we talked about before, a little bit of the social media, the targeted ads that you're seeing on Facebook especially, but other platforms as well. And that is really changing the way that candidates are reaching voters, because it can be done in a more low-cost, effective way than the broadcast ads that are the traditional way of reaching voters. But the other things that Mark pointed to of the, you know, the overpass signs, the signs at busy intersections, that's more of a sort of outgrowth from some of the traditional techniques that have been used over the years, mm-hmm. of yard signs and the door-to-door leaflets, the more hands-on kind of grassroots approach to campaigning that's always been part of American politics. But this is a new kind of angle on that approach as well.
So Madison Mayor Paul Solomon is one of the Democratic candidates. What I find interesting is that his ad has gotten talk sort of outside of the TV realm, because it's kind of visually interesting. It goes after Walker harder than any of the other ads, and he's trying to be funny. And I want to know if that's got him any play. Let's play Paul Soglin's ad.
If Scott Walker isn't scary enough, now Donald Trump is in control. Trump ordered Walker to send billions of our money to Foxconn. At home, Walker's neglect shatters roads and schools. He aids polluters, fouling our water, air, and land. Walker is tearing down our UW system. We need to cut the strings. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin knows an economy built on strengthening families will make Wisconsin ours again.
So, you know those old movies where you had the villain who often had a mustache that he twirled? That's kind of, there's no mustache that they paint on Scott Walker, but that's kind of how they portray Scott Walker in this video, which is an animated video. And it's attention getting, and it has gotten people talking about this above and beyond seeing the ads on TV. Is this going to help him?
Yeah, it is very attention-getting, and I agree with you that visually it was, I thought, the most attractive of the, you know, 10 or so ads that I looked at last night and today. And the other thing I think that it was telling about this ad, and I think it was unique among the ads I looked at, is that he explicitly makes the link to Donald Trump in the visuals. So the part where he says we need to cut the strings,
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump that is manipulating Scott Walker like a marionette. So Walker is the puppet underneath Donald Trump, and Trump is holding the strings of Scott Walker, and we need to cut those strings is you know, directly trying to tie Scott Walker to Donald Trump. Is something I mentioned at the outset is a key thing in midterm elections, this idea that midterms are a referendum on the president.
Right. You know, one of the things I find interesting is that he said that Trump ordered Governor Walker to create the Foxconn deal. Is that actually accurate?
Well, that I think that's an overstatement. I mean, unless there's some additional information, you know, behind the scenes that we don't know about publicly, that seems to be an overstatement of what, at least publicly, we know about it. Certainly, Donald Trump was, you know, supporting Scott Walker's efforts here, but it's not like this wouldn't have happened otherwise, and something that Scott Walker been pushing for a long time. So it seems to me that's a bit of an overstatement.
Paul Soglin is a very popular mayor in Madison, which is very liberal. If he wins the nomination, what does he do with the rest of the state?
Well, this has been a concern for Democrats in many statewide races. You know, can a Madison candidate win statewide? And, you know, we definitely had Madison candidates win, but they're, especially in an election coming right on the heels of Donald Trump, you know, carrying the state in 2016, I think there is more concern about the rural counties in Wisconsin, the ability to reach Democrats and independents in those counties. So that would be, you know, definitely a tall order, but it can be done, and it has been done in the past.
We are talking about election ads, specifically the Democratic gubernatorial ads that have been running pretty much nonstop for the last week. We are taking your calls also, 800-642-1234. We're going to be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The primaries are tomorrow, and we're dissecting political ads for the Democratic gubernatorial race with David Cannon. He's a political science professor at UW-Madison. What do you think of these ads? Do they sway you? Do you think they sway others? Have you made up your mind about who you're voting for? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Ideas at WPR.org is the number, is the address to email us, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Okay, David, we've got some people on the line here. John from Windsor, welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, there's only been two people from Madison that have ever been elected governor, as Phil LaFollit and Jim Doyle. So it is true that we need to make sure that we're getting looking at outstate. And an example with Kelda Royce is her first advertisement was on abortion. Now, that's good for the base, but that alienates about 40% of the population of Wisconsin. I think that the four main topics that people need to be taking a look at are education, which Tony Evers is doing, medical health insurance, Scott Rhodes, because we have a lot of Scott holes in this state, and Foxconn, because why are we building a factory for 15,000 people in Illinois to get jobs? What do you think of that?
Okay, cool. David, those are the four issues that John thinks that politicians should be focusing on: healthcare, Rhodes, education, and Foxconn. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's what, in the first half hour, we hit on a couple of the different ads that talked about exactly those four issues. And at the top of the hour, the three that I highlighted were roads, education, healthcare. And then the Foxconn ad got added in by especially the focus of Matt Flynn, who's making it the centerpiece of his campaign. But Scott Walker was hit pretty hard by Paul Soglin as well in his ad on Foxconn. So I think John's exactly right. Those are the four issues that will be getting the most attention from the eventual Democratic nominee.
So John mentioned Kelda Royce. I'd like to play her ad right now.
Just when you think it can't get any worse, it does. In Wisconsin, abortion is still a crime. And I can't believe that I'm having to fight the same fights that my grandmother fought. You know, as a parent, I think about my daughters. I tell my girls, we can't look backwards. We have to move forward. We have to build the future that we want. I'm Kelda Royce. As your governor, I'll lead Wisconsin forward from day one.
So what strikes me about that ad, David, is that there's a lot of talk and a lot of has been written about middle-class women, mostly middle-class white women, who are angry and who are organizing. And it seems that Kelda Royce is going right to them. I tell my girls, I can't believe we are going backwards.
Right. Yeah, no, clearly that's what she's doing in this ad. And it's definitely aimed at that Democratic base, as John pointed out in his call, is this is something that could work quite well in the Democratic primary, but then won't be as effective in the general election because it is a very polarizing issue, whereas the issues of health care, education, roads, that's something that, you know, all people in Wisconsin care about, and it's not as divisive anyway as abortion. So this could be a very effective message for the primary, but not so much for the general election.
Now, Kelda Royce, she has more money than anybody else at this point, doesn't she?
At least in the last reporting period, she had raised more than any of the other Democratic candidates. And so she, you know, clearly is hitting a chord with some groups in Wisconsin because, as we mentioned before, most of the money is staying on the sidelines until we have a nominee. But Royce has been pretty effective in raising money.
We are taking your calls on the Democratic gubernatorial race tomorrow. More specifically on the ads, what do you think of the ads? Do they help sway you? 800-642-1234. Kirk from Wisconsin Dells, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank you for having me on the air. The question I want to ask focuses on what appears to be out-of-state ads. Now, your producer, and I want to thank her for this, the fact-checking that she's doing, there's some confusion about what I saw and what she's seeing on the amounts, specifically about the Buchmeier campaign. The Uline Corporation is funding ads against Leah Buchmeier, and for one of the other candidates, but this is a corporation that is based out of our state to the south, and it's a corporation that's donating millions to our state election. And the only reason I caught this is I don't like TV ads, so I always look where the money's coming from. I always follow the money. First thing I do when I see an ad is I whip out my phone and Google it up on Wikipedia and see where these companies are that are paying for these ads. How do we view these ads in light of the fact that this money could come from anywhere, and the vast majority of people don't want to take the time to look past the 15 or 30 seconds that is right in front of them?
Interesting question, Kirk. Thank you very much. Money comes in from everywhere. The Supreme Court has ruled that corporations are people in terms of their ability to give to campaigns, and it doesn't always have to be stated who's giving to the campaign, right, David?
Well, so, yeah, Kirk raises a very important point in terms of outside money. But one clarification of exactly how this works is that the corporations can't give unlimited contributions to the campaigns. That is still illegal.
But they can give it to super PACs.
Correct. So they can run these independent ads on their own, and it has to be, you know, separate from the actual campaigns. But Kirk's right that the amount of outside money already, especially in the Senate race, Nicholson has received a lot of spending on his behalf against Leah Buchmeier. We haven't seen too much outside money yet, I don't think, in the governor's race, but we definitely will be seeing it on both sides for the general election. I saw just in the paper this morning that the Republican Governors Association is planning on spending over $4 million on Scott Walker's behalf, and the Democratic Governors Association is going to spend something like $2.5 million in the last couple weeks of the campaign for the Democratic nominee. And so we get a lot of outside money. In fact, typically there's more outside money spent in a governor's race and the Senate race than there is by the campaigns themselves.
What I find interesting about that is that the outside money is spent, but that doesn't that shouldn't necessarily mean that it translates to votes. What's the direct line between dollars given and votes cast?
Well, right, and you raised this point a little bit earlier, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it yet, of, you know, is it just simply the one who spends the most money that wins?
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely not the case. That, you know, if that were the case, Jeb Bush would be president right now. He spent, like, you know, $100 million for, like, almost nothing
right
in the Republican primaries. And Donald Trump was outspent pretty handily by Hillary Clinton. And so, you know, it's definitely not the case that who spends the most money wins. Now, it's obviously an advantage having more money, and you have to hit a certain critical threshold before you can become a credible candidate. But after a point, you do hit a saturation effect where there's, you know, basically every 30-second spot is bought up by someone, and then the additional dollars spent after that point are really wasted money.
But, you know, Donald Trump got a lot of free advertising. I mean, he got a lot of free publicity just because the press was just so fascinated by the entertainment value of his candidacy.
True, yeah. So if you add up all of the free media that he received and then add that to the actual paid media, then, yeah, he would have had, you know, more airtime than Hillary Clinton had. So that may not be the best example, but Jeb Bush is certainly a good example where, you know, he did spend, you know, records amount of money early on and had almost nothing to show for it.
We are going to look now at Mahlon Mitchell. Mahlon Mitchell is the head of the Firefighters Union, and he is also running for governor.
A fresh new leader for Wisconsin, Mahlon Mitchell for governor. A firefighter since he was 20, elected union president by firefighters from across the state. A dad who does outreach for at-risk kids. Mahlon Mitchell will unite Wisconsin and bring us back together.
I'll take on corporations to raise wages, return the money that Walker stole from our schools. And I will fight against racism and division because our kids' future depends on it.
Our kids' future. Everybody is talking about our kids' future. Mahlon Mitchell came to prominence a little bit in 2011 when he was speaking up against what Scott Walker was doing, Act 10. How does this ad play for you, David?
I think it's a good positive ad of introducing Mahlon Mitchell to the voters of Wisconsin. That's one thing that, you know, with eight candidates in the field, there's still a lot of voters who really don't know who these candidates are. And so a good ad is one that can introduce the candidate in a positive way. And I think this ad does a very effective job of that.
You know, he talks and other candidates talk about uniting Wisconsin. Is that possible at this point?
Oh, wow. that's a good question. But it's certainly something that voters say they want. That if you look at any poll that's taken about politics, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally, Americans don't like the division and polarization we have in politics right now. That Americans in general are more pragmatic, centrist. They would rather see our political system working together rather than dividing us. And so that's something that clearly resonates with voters. And I think it's especially, I think it is a dig at the divisive politics of 2011. And so Mitchell, I think, is a good candidate to bring this up, given his role in Act 10 and trying to stop what was happening with that divisive politics.
And he's taking racism head on. As governor, he is saying that he will fight racism. Is that going to be something that is played? He's the only black candidate in this race.
Yeah, so he's the only candidate of the eight who's making that part of his campaign as well. And I think this goes back to one of those other issues that we talked about, like with Kelderoy's with abortion, with that ad, where this isn't an approach that could work pretty well with the base. Not so sure it worked as well in the general election.
We are talking about the gubernatorial election, the primary that is going to take place tomorrow. We've been inundated with ads for the last week, and David Cannon has been here with me to dissect these ads. David is going to be coming back. We're going to look at a few more ads and take your phone calls, 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. After tomorrow, there will be one Democratic gubernatorial candidate to face off against Scott Walker. And the eight people in the running have been running lots of ads. Well, five of them pretty much have. We're dissecting these ads for this race with David Cannon, political science professor at UW-Madison. And we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dan from Milwaukee. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. I'm speaking from the perspective of being involved in Democratic politics for over 50 years. And I must say, I think this show is missing a trend that is going on here, which is to discount the importance of political ads because of suspicion over the big money that pays for the ad.
Mm.
And so I think this, the assumption behind this show is a bit unfortunate, which is that the that to simplify the Democratic field of eight candidates, we'll simplify it down to four because there are only four that have chosen to raise the big donor money to run ads. And that's a model that some are questioning right now. And, of course, you're getting calls from all over the state this morning for Mike McCabe because he has consciously chosen not to seek big donor money. He has raised money and run an efficient campaign that is focused on grassroots organizations and volunteers who are doing a word-of-mouth campaign instead of the big media campaign. And I think this show running one day, and I must challenge you positively, running one day before the primary election is unfortunate in the sense that the assumption is that big money, big ads count on, or, and TV ads count, and therefore will simplify the race down to the four candidates. And there gets to be kind of a media bubble echo effect here, that the only candidates who count are the ones who've taken the big money.
Okay, so Dan, I have to ask you a question here. You said that you have worked in Democratic politics for a long time. Are you working for Mike McCabe?
Yes, I am, and I'm glad to say that because, precisely because I'm an example, as you have from your other callers, there are so many people who are absolutely fed up with big money in politics.
I hear you, Dan. Thank you very much for that. We are talking to David Cannon, UW-Madison professor. There are a lot of people who are passionate about their candidate, and we have seen ads, and we've heard lots of people call in here. We have not seen ads, David, from Kathleen Vinehout, Josh Paid. People have been talking about why we haven't seen ads from Mike McCabe. What do you think about the other two candidates?
Well, yeah. So, and just to address the caller's point, though, on the alternative ways of reaching voters, and we have in the show talked about the importance of social media and reaching voters that way, and then grassroots outreach efforts as well. Which, again, grassroots campaigns have always had a role in American politics, and there's a lot of research showing that door-to-door kind of personal contacts are more effective in getting people to vote than anything else you can do. And so there's definitely something to back that up. But on the other hand, there's still, you know, massive research showing that broadcast ads do matter. It is the way you can most quickly reach the most voters, and that's why almost all campaigns are still doing that. And so I think it makes sense to focus on those ads because that's what most voters are seeing. Now, and the other three candidates who aren't running ads, in part, is because, you know, they don't have the resources to spend their money that way, and they think they can spend their money more efficiently than in these other more grassroots based
ways. I'm going to bring this back to Facebook and Twitter. I mean, the 2016 election was influenced in large parts by political ads. And that were maybe not correct, but they were put on Facebook and Twitter, mostly Facebook.
Well, right, and that's where we saw actually the foreign influence, the Russian influence, was mm-hmm. almost entirely through the social media ads. And so it's a less regulated side of the media exposure. It is open for other influences, like, you know, the Russian influence, unfortunately, we saw in 2016. Now, I'm not saying that's happened here in Wisconsin. In the governor's race, we have no evidence that that's going on right now in the governor's race here. But
it is a way to get to people. The social media is a decent way to get to people. We have been talking to David Cannon about the ads in the gubernatorial Democratic race. The race is tomorrow. The primary is tomorrow, and we will know who is going to be running against Scott Walker by tomorrow night. David, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
County Highway officials say local taxpayers will pay more for bridge replacements thanks to a policy change at the Department of Transportation. WPR's Rich Kramer reports the agency says it's spreading money across the state and funding more bridge projects, but some local governments are seeing their share of the bill increase by hundreds of thousands of dollars.
This spring, a driver reported hearing strange noises when crossing the 195th Street Bridge in Chippewa County. When inspectors arrived, they found broken support beams that left one side of the bridge sagging. Lafayette Town Board Chair David Staber says there were plans to replace the bridge in 2021, but the collapse moved that up to next year.
Fortunately, nobody got hurt in this process. It did speed up the bridge replacement for us, but you'd think that they could have come up with a better plan than having to demolish a bridge to build a new one because of an emergency.
To end delays like the one in Chippewa County, the Department of Transportation moved to a new funding policy called Replace in Kind. The department says the goal is to standardize how state bridge funds are distributed, but highway officials say the policy has a new set of problems. Late last month, work was finishing up on the County Highway H bridge rehabilitation in Phillips, just up the road from the Price County Highway Shop. Commissioner Don Grande says delays pushed the project back 8 years, so he was surprised when the state approved all three bridge applications he submitted this year. But Grande says the new rules force counties to design replacement bridges based on current traffic, and weight limits are keeping logging trucks off of one of the bridges Price County wants to replace.
The traffic volumes will increase once the bridge is replaced and the weight limits come off. We're concerned that we're going to undersize that bridge or underdesign that bridge just in order to be eligible for the funding.
One of the biggest impacts of the DOT's Replace in Kind policy has to do with covering the costs of work on the road leading to a bridge, either to repair damage caused by construction equipment or to make changes to accommodate the new bridge. Under the old rules, the DOT would pay for 250 feet of road. La Crosse County Highway Commissioner Ron Chamberlain says now the state only pays for 50 feet.
The first difficulty with 50 feet right out of the chute is you're going to site cranes and materials and everything else on that approach during the process of construction. 50 feet on each side is not going to contain those items alone.
Eau Claire County Highway Commissioner John Johnson says that has significantly increased his costs for three upcoming bridge replacements.
So from that standpoint, you know, you're looking at $100,000 on each structure. That's $300,000. You're going to have available to an additional funds.
The DOT says local governments can apply for more funds for approaches or bridge work based on engineering needs, but local officials are skeptical any funds will be available. In May, Governor Scott Walker gave credit to the new Replace in Kind bridge policy for helping the state approve all 183 bridge applications submitted this year. In an interview that month, DOT Section Chief June Coleman said that while the state used to pay more bridge replacement costs, that caused delays.
They were funded with what they were asking for, but that could be a more costly bridge, and then another bridge, you know, the funds wouldn't be available to fund those bridges.
In a downtown Menominee coffee shop, Dan Federley sits at a back table. He's a longtime engineering consultant and current executive director of the Wisconsin County Highway Association. He's in favor of building more bridges, but says pushing costs on local governments isn't the way to do it.
So all we're doing is shifting the cost to a place where you can't fund them. And without a comprehensive, sustainable, long-term revenue at the state level, we will only be talking about this over and over, and we're at the point where there is no ability to shift those costs.
Federley says local governments are planning their budgets for next year, and it will be telling how many can afford the rest of the bridge projects approved by the state. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Rich. For more coverage of transportation in Wisconsin, visit WPR.org. You can also visit our webpage for the latest political news. You can visit WisconsinVote.org. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.